all civilian traffic is barred from streets and highways. Stay in your homes. Stay in your homes.
Live from the Forbidden Book Group studio in Doppeltown, USA, it's Necronomipod with your hosts, Mike Stoffel and Mike Moncada. Episode 18, Robert McCannon's Swan Song, the story of an ugly duckling who becomes a swan, and the post-apocalyptic Peter Pan who loves her for it. And now, Necronomipod!
Those found without specific military orders are subject to summary execution. Stay in your homes. Repeat, Comrade Channel. This is a Class 1 emergency. All civilian traffic is barred from streets and highways.
And we're back.
Hey, it's been
a while.
It's
been a long time.
It has been a long time.
It's almost been like since last year.
Yes, it has almost been since last year, since our special holiday episode, and
which was well received.
It was, actually. I've had people talk to me about it.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. People, three people have talked to me about the holiday episode.
Interesting. So. What did they say about it?
Well, nothing but good things.
Hmm.
One complaint about our sound quality, which is why I am
again
nearly swallowing this mic right now.
That was our best sound.
It was pretty good, but we're getting there. We're just working on it. Just, you know, faithful readers, listeners, just bear with us.
Or turn the volume up.
Yeah, just turn the volume up.
For the love of Christ.
We picked the book last time because we knew it was going to be a while before we recorded again. So we picked a book that was a little longer than our normal books.
It was long.
it was long. And the book that we picked was Robert McCammon's classic from the 80s, Swan Song.
For this very special 18th episode.
18th episode of
Necronomipod.
Necronomipod. And so it took us a while. Well, it took me a while.
It took you a while.
Well, you just sat at home and swallowed it whole. Christmas cookie chapter. Christmas cookie chapter. Me, I was out and about doing stuff. I went a whole week without being able to crack the book once. Which kind of sucked because I wanted to read it.
When I saw it was almost 1,000 pages, I just was so angry enough that I wanted to just, the anger drove me through it.
Don't you like books to be long? Don't you like to like climb in and...
Some books.
Okay.
Like long, but some books say...
But not this book or not horror books?
Not this book.
Okay.
And not books about puppies.
And yeah. Or books.
Or unicorns.
Books that I'm assigned in class.
No, there are some books you want to go on and on and on.
Yeah.
But see, my thing is the long books,
mm-hmm.
unless they've been serialized,
yeah.
tend to be nothing but filler. Somebody's unedited.
Really? Like was this filler? You can't see my expression, but he's going to say something, and I'm going to disagree with him.
I think there was a lot of filler in this.
I disagree. I thought it was relatively tightly plotted.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you read.
Well, there was a plot.
There was a very almost too well-defined plot.
That's what I'm saying. To me, that's filler.
Yeah, I suppose.
Wow, we're jumping in.
I know, here we are.
I don't think I can do that yet.
Yeah, we have to back up. What's he been up to the last month?
Beep, beep. nothing.
Nothing, just stuff. You know.
Any interesting news on the horror sci-fi horizon?
Cloverfield opens up a couple days
from
now.
Yeah, what is all this Cloverfield?
It's a big secret. But
I'm thinking it's like Godzilla or something.
That's what I'm thinking. But
Mothra.
It's probably Mothra or Rodan. Or a Gamera.
The Statue of the Thinker.
The Statue of the Thinker takes on the Statue of Liberty. Very well, yeah, that's probably it. What about you? What has been going on in your horror world?
In my horror world? Well, I picked up a book that we weren't supposed to read yet, and I already read it.
Yeah, well, you know, you can read it again.
I will. Yeah. And I enjoyed it. Do you have any predictions for horror for this new year?
I predict there will be wonderfully horrible things going on. Well, there's a couple
of them. Well, if you look at the primaries, it's already happening. Gas prices and the recession that we're heading into.
Gas prices are fine. You know, the higher the gas prices, the better for the world. This is from a guy who rides the electric train to work.
Because you can.
Because I can.
I can't.
No, you can't.
I pollute the world every day.
Yeah. I like a nice big carbon footprint.
My carbon footprint's a size 13.
At ladies. At least. But I don't know.
Did you see I Am Legend yet?
I have seen I Am Legend. I found it rather disappointing.
Really?
Because
it got great reviews.
Yes, except when you watch it, it looks like they have made a really good movie and then chicken out at the last 10 minutes. It looks like somebody took
So they don't use the ending from the book.
No.
Well,
no, I mean, and
that was the whole freaking point.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's why
the title.
That's why the title. And then they try to explain the title, and when they get to it, they finally speak those words. Well, you know, and he was a legend, and he had become legend. It's completely incomprehensible, and it has nothing to do with the original book. Now,
can they ever do that book?
See, but the problem is that the first like 2/3 of the movie, as far as I can tell, he was pretty closely to the book, and they just chicken out.
Because they can't kill off Will Smith.
Oh well, you haven't seen it.
No.
Can I spoil it for you?
Of course.
Spoiler alert. Oh, he dies.
Oh, he does.
Oh, he dies. Yeah. But instead of him being a legend to this new race of creatures, the creatures, they're behaving like they do in the book. He can't quite tell that they have their own culture. He just doesn't understand it.
Right.
But if you're watching it closely as a viewer, you can see that they have feelings. They're just not human feelings.
Right.
But they never explicitly talk about that. They never bring that up.
This is the next evolution.
Yeah, they never talk about that at all.
Oh.
None of the creatures get a voice, although there are some that have like character. He captures one to do experiments on it, and another one risks going into the light after her. And you have this moment, it's like, wait a minute, I think doesn't want her to be caught. He doesn't, you know, maybe they have like feeling for each other, and they just don't even talk about it.
Oh.
Not even at the very not anywhere in the
book. Well, my God, in the book, there's like a leader, and he's eloquent,
yeah, and in this one, there's a leader too. He's just not eloquent.
He's just more monstrous.
They don't say anything, but there's clearly something going on with him. But they never talk about it.
I wonder why they were checking out about that.
I don't know, because they could have made such a better movie. Now, I'm speaking about this book like I've read it.
And you never read it?
And I've never read it. I just talked to you about it.
You've never read I Am Legend?
No, nope, never have.
Another shocker.
I know, I'm a little ashamed.
And it's not even a big book.
No, it's very short.
Well, we have to read it.
Maybe we will. Maybe we'll do that. We have all kinds of ideas. This new year
percolating.
This new year is just really filling
just
us
chock
up.
Full
of ideas. we should actually disabuse our listeners about our enthusiasm about the Golden Compass. I remember we were pretty excited about going to see it.
We were.
Yeah, we were pretty excited, and
not so excited anymore.
No, it was
castrated.
Yeah,
it was.
It had.
They chickened out too.
They also chickened out. It had gone through intercision.
It really did.
Yeah,
they
cut its soul away.
Yep. Yeah, that was one of my outside of anything in my personal life. That was one of the huge disappointments of 2007.
Yeah, it was like it was easily the biggest movie disappointment for me of 2007.
Yeah,
because it looked great up until I'm sitting in the theater and I'm watching important like plot points just get submerged.
Yeah.
And and
well, and also they didn't end the movie where the book ended.
Yeah, which is okay.
They ended in the middle of.
They didn't do that with Lord of the Rings either. Mm. Yeah, they rearranged it a little bit, and you know that I didn't have a problem with that. I just had a big problem with them just you know completely glossing over the main themes of the books. And it was especially disappointing because the movie was perfectly cast,
and it was the set design
and art design was exactly right. It was so great, and
I don't know if they can get it right the second time. I don't even know if they'll make it the second.
I don't even know if they'll make the second movie.
I don't know how well it did.
I don't know. Might just be hanging out there like Battlefield Earth. That was supposed to be 2.
Really?
Oh, yeah. That was only the first half of the book that they filmed.
Oh, dear.
That's what I'm told. That one I also haven't read. But I'm not so ashamed about that.
Maybe they'll remake that one. Okay. We've wasted enough time.
All right. I agree.
So, Swan Song.
Swan Song. Tell us about Swan Song.
I'm like,
what do you remember?
Okay, so I read this book I just got through it quicker than you did. And I thought we were started at the same time.
But I probably started before you did. Yeah. I got it the day after our last podcast.
I read it 3 weeks ago.
3 weeks ago? Were you done before Christmas?
Yes. I was done the week of Christmas.
My God, in hell, I was like 150 pages, 200 pages in.
Yeah.
Yeah, well...
Because I made myself, I hunkered down. So this day is devoted to this book.
But the point of it?
Because I'm treating this like a part of one of my jobs.
Oh.
Like I want goals. Yeah. And
But the reason we picked such a long book was so that, you know, we had this continuous reading until, you know, roughly the middle of January, which is where we're sitting right now, it being the 16th.
So we're relying on my pre-Alzheimer's memory to...
Barely.
Pre-Alzheimer's memory. Well, I think the thing that... what do I remember about this book? Is that what you're asking me?
Yeah, just give us the big rundown, quick rundown.
The rundown is that this takes place during the Cold War. The Cold War has not ended.
Yes.
Russia and the U.S. are in kind of standoffs.
Mm-hmm.
And the president... has to make it. Russia is lining up its nuclear warheads, and
nuclear.
I don't even know what that is anymore. They're A bombs. And the H bombs and the F bombs and. The president has to make a decision, and basically the president sends off, Russia does a first strike, and the U.S. follows, or the U.S. does a first strike, and Russia follows.
It's impossible to tell.
And then everybody else sort of follows suit, and so we're basically following some characters that are affected by this war.
The nuclear holocaust.
Devastates the planet. It goes into a nuclear winter.
Yeah,
and
which is kind of funny because I remember the concept of the nuclear winter coming up roughly about the time that this book was published, but I thought it was after. Unless you remember, remember that movie,
Testament, or The Day After.
The Day After, yeah, about about Lawrence, Kansas. Remember, it took place in Lawrence, Kansas.
That was in 1980. That movie came out.
It came out in
1980.
82. Oh, okay. So this book came out in 87. So the nuclear winter would have been an established concept at that.
Pretty much.
Okay.
So we follow this street woman,
Sister Creep.
We follow this girl Swan,
Sue Wanda,
and her mother. And this wrestler, this pro wrestler called Black Frankenstein.
Circuit wrestler. also known as Josh.
And we follow this kind of demon character.
Yeah. They never say. I think he's clearly supposed to be Satan, but they never say.
We're not really sure.
They're not really sure.
We follow
some of the characters are sure who they are, who he is, but the author doesn't tip his hand.
We follow this boy and his family who go underground into this sort of sanctuary.
It's a survivalist.
And there's an underground colonel.
Colonel Macklin.
Who is part of this. And this is a survivalist camp under in a mountain somewhere.
Yep, a retired colonel.
And who else? Those are the big ones, right?
Sister Creep and her entourage. There's Josh and Swan and those.
Their entourage.
And then there's Roland Croninger and Macklin.
Yeah.
And those are the really, those are the people's heads that you're in for the most part.
So basically what you get is this sort of, you see this dystopia. And how the world sort of starts subdividing into the clans,
yes,
in a way, and how they survive. There's no plant life. Mostly all the plant life is gone. People are kind of scavenging.
Yeah,
the water is. The water has deteriorated.
It's all heavy water.
Animals are mutating.
Yeah.
And the sun never comes out.
Yeah, it's always cloudy.
It's always cloudy.
Always cold.
It's cold. And people are sick with lesions.
Lots
and,
of people. Yeah. What do they call those? Keloids?
Yeah.
And
there's this disease that people have called the...
Job's mask.
Job's dropsy.
Job's heebie-jeebies.
So people
Job's mask, it's called.
And a lot of the people on the characters in the book were burned from the radiation, from the fires.
Yeah, if they were anywhere near, if they were like in sight of a detonation, that would be enough to burn off your skin and your hair.
So basically what happens is this devastation happens, and then some of these characters sort of align with something that is good or hopeful.
Mm-hmm.
And they're sort of set out on this journey.
Mm-hmm.
They're sort of set into this arc of trying to find each other in a way, and they're not really sure what they're trying to find, and they're led by this kind of crowny, melty jewel thing that Sister Creep finds it.
Yeah, she finds it.
She looks into it. It's like a seeing stone almost.
Yeah.
You look into it, you can see visions, but it also has healing powers. Yeah. And
it's like a magic crystal hula hoop, only smaller.
I didn't think of it as a hula hoop. I thought of it more as like a tiara.
A tiara, yeah. Because it had spikes coming out.
Right.
Yeah. I identified it fairly early on as a crown.
Like the Statue of Liberty crown.
Like the Statue of Liberty crown. But it's a big surprise about three quarters of the way through the book when Sister Creep suddenly realizes it's a crown. I'm like, of course it's a crown.
Yeah, I didn't know it was an issue. And then this swan girl has the ability to like sort of regenerate life.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not quite, in the beginning of the book, it's sort of...
It's raw talent.
It's raw.
Yeah.
And then there's this devil creature who's basically like a skinwalker.
Yeah.
Takes over other people's bodies and...
Yeah, just kind of changes his own face.
So it's basically the premise of this book. It's sort of this convergence. Like, will humanity survive? Can there be hope? Can it regroup?
Mm-hmm.
Can life return to the earth? Or is it going to be just thoroughly destroyed?
Yeah.
And there's two camps, basically.
Yeah.
There's good and evil. It's very, you know.
Yeah, you follow sort of, the four storylines. And there's the two good ones that converge and the two bad ones. Basically, once you read a couple of chapters, you realize that there's four basic points of view, and you know that they're going to converge, and that at some point, they're all just going to be in the same place.
Right.
And takes a while.
And that's the problem I had with this book. I have a couple things. So, number one is that I read The Stand first. The Stand came
out
before this, and this book is often... As I was doing reading about this book,
yeah,
it's often compared to The Stand.
Unfavorably
compared to The Stand, yes. Which I don't know if it's fair or not, but it does seem like it's sort of a cheat.
Yeah, I don't think it is fair. I understand what people say, like, you know, this is just The Stand all over again. But there are things that The Stand did really, really well. I think this is The Stand is in the first half of it is way better than any part of this book. And then the ending of The Stand is way worse.
I never liked the ending of The Stand. No, it's dumb. And I didn't like the ending of this.
I didn't either.
It felt the same to me. It's like, we've got to end this somehow.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you're reading this book and you think, in my mind, I'm thinking, I read The Stand and now I'm rereading The Stand.
Yeah.
And so it's hard not to make the comparison.
It's really hard. I mean,
because there's like the wise black woman who's tough and that's just a creep. And there's the, you know, there's Visions and there stands, there's Visions. And then there's the cruel sort of Nazi, you know, in this book, like, when are they going to do the Nazi thing?
And the Nazi thing comes up. And there's the walking dude.
There's the walking dude. And then there's the dude who's sort of like into the war, you know, who's the guy who drives the atom bomb guy who's in the jail in The Stand?
I can't remember his name.
That guy, you know,
Max Headroom plays him in the movie.
Right. All for you. You know, there's that kind of character.
And yeah.
So it's hard not to make the comparison. And I think the other piece of it is because what I didn't like about it, I guess, is that you can see the trajectory of where these stories going, and the characters just sort of follow.
Along. That's my main complaint about the book is. I mean, it bothers me a little bit that it's so much like The Stand, but The Stand itself is cribbed from better books. If you would indulge me,
let's go ahead.
Here I go.
You do have your list.
I have my list. You should
use it.
I love and these kind of Last Man on Earth and you know.
Giant, I do too.
I really do.
I do too.
And I read a bunch of them. And my favorite one is a book that's was published in I think 1948 called The Earth Abides or Earth Abides, which is the original flu. The flu wipes out most of the human race. And it's just about. It was written by like a an ecologist or a, no, I think it was a geographer. And what he was mainly interested in was what would happen to the earth if humans were suddenly not around anymore. And so in the Earth Abides, there are whole chapters where there's no characters. It's just, you know.
Rust.
Rust. It's about rust or about, you know, they're in mostly takes place in Northern California in Oakland. And smog was already a big problem at that time in California. And all it takes, if there's no more cars driving around, it takes one rainfall, and there's no more air pollution. That's it. That's all it will take. Just washes it right out, and you've got crystal clear skies again. That book is fascinating, and it's never been out of print. And you know, it's one of the great speculative books of the 20th century. And that's where Stephen King got his idea for his fantastic beginning. Sections of just understand. Also behind this book is all those great World War III novels like A Last Babylon by Pat Frank, I think, or On the Beach by Neville Shute, or countless scads of science fiction books, Canticle for Leibowitz.
And another one of my favorite books.
Yeah, another fantastic book. But it goes back even further than that. It goes back to, there's a book from the late 19th century called The Purple Cloud, which is about the Earth passing through some cosmic dust, you know, and wiping out everybody. And one guy is left on the planet. And he systematically goes around and starts setting fire to all the capitals of Europe just because he can. So this is another one of those in a long line of books like this. There's a recent one, which is one of the best ones ever written. It's by Cormac McCarthy. You ever heard of this book? It's called The Road. Mm. Cormac McCarthy is? Mm-hmm. They're making a movie out of it.
Mm.
It's just about a father and a son who have survived the nuclear holocaust, and nuclear winter has set in, and there's no magic, nothing. People are just walking the road, going from settlement to settlement, looking for, checking out abandoned buildings, looking for canned food so they can stay alive. Cannibalism has set in. There are roving gangs with, you know, following tanker trucks with all their fuel, and ice cream trucks with gun turrets mounted across the top of them, all of that, which is, you know, really similar to this book, the really horrible stuff, but without any of the magic.
Yeah.
And it's a far more frightening book.
Yeah.
And it's about a 16th of its length.
Well, yeah. And I mean, it all tends to the finding the worst in people, and that the worst.
Absolutely.
And that when put under.
Absolutely.
When put under duress, the worst in people will come out.
No kidding.
And. Just I pretty much believe.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's kind of the world that we're set in this.
Yeah.
Except there's this magical.
Yeah.
Element, and it's. And you don't know who that's coming from.
No, you don't.
You know?
It kind of annoys me that the magical element kind of actually bugs me a bit.
Really?
In this book, because I didn't think it added to the book at all.
Did it bug you more than it bugged you in The Stand?
Yeah, that whole thing in The Stand just bugged the shit out of me.
The visions and stuff like
all
that?
The visions, all of that. It just bugged me. Because I thought it would have been a better book if it was simply... Well, see, and this is not fair. I thought these books would be better if they were other books.
Right.
The Stand would be better if it was The Earth Abides. This would be better if it was The Road. Which isn't fair. No. Okay, so I'll just retract that whole... cranky dad.
Well, I did sort of think in some way that I would want to believe that if humanity destroyed itself, that the earth would produce something that would help it regenerate, and if it would come out in a human being, or if it would come out in some object, I kind of would want to believe that. But
I mean, I think
the earth, way the world works,
the earth would regenerate,
but not humans.
Yeah, I mean, right now nuclear bombs, this is going to be so cynical of me to say this, but right now, an event that this cataclysmic, speaking for the health of the Earth, would be just the chemo it needs. Because right now, the Earth as an organism has cancer and has it bad. And it's humanity, because we're just metastasizing out of control. And the Earth might just, the immune system might just kick in and set things to right. And that's kind of what happens in this book. You know, it goes through, not chemo, but goes through radiation therapy and gets the disease under control. And at the very end, it starts, healing itself, producing new bone marrow, or as the case may be. I know, that's terrible, but I actually believe it.
Well, I mean, the Earth existed way before humanity, and the Earth will exist way after humanity.
The Earth will abide. Not in this form. Yeah, the Earth will abide.
But you know, and I think if we would somehow figure that out sooner rather than later, maybe it would be
maybe it'll let us benefit. Yeah, maybe it'll let us continue.
It'll let us continue.
Because it's not up to us.
Yeah. Well, in a way it is up to us if we keep choking ourselves off.
Yeah.
Eventually the earth will not be able to
sustain
our existence.
And it'll just slough us off and keep marching.
And yeah, so that's in a way that's this book, except it does sort of prize humanity, that there's something about humanity.
Yeah,
there were some schmaltzy things, though. I mean,
there's tons of schmaltz.
And of course, I'm always a sucker for schmaltz, but then I know that it's schmaltz, and I'm feeling pissed off that
there's no characters in
it. It's not subtle.
No, there's nothing that any character says in this book that is not that didn't strike me as cliched.
Right.
The characters are
sometimes our faces need to show that our one day you can see the inside on the outside.
I know.
Sugar lips.
I know. So. So did you catch any clever little literary subtexts and allusions going on here? Sometimes I thought they were clever.
I'm sure I did, but I don't remember them.
well, here are just a few.
I'm sure you did. You have
Here are just a few. Here's the list. At one point, as they're easing on down the road, there's a little girl and a yappy little dog.
Oh yeah.
So there's a Wizard of Oz thing going on here, and yeah. I think that whole scene where they find when they meet God up at the mountain.
He's the wizard.
He's the Peter Pan. For a little while, Swan kind of acts as Wendy to Robin and the rest.
Oh, of yeah, his, yeah, that was the Lost Boys.
Boys. Uh-huh. Yeah, that's in there.
Saw that.
There's a ton of very there's a tarot deck in here, which lends symbolism that runs through the whole thing.
Yeah.
The tarot deck I think is in there because all the way through this, remember what the prayer is that's supposed to activate the bomb? Did you identify what that prayer was? Because it wasn't a prayer, it was a poem.
Was it from The Wasteland?
It was The Wasteland, yeah. The Wasteland is all through this. I think that is probably the guiding metaphor for the whole book.
Wow.
About the
in what way?
The Fisher King is this king who is unable to...
Right.
He's, you know...
He has an injury to his groin.
To something like that,
so it affects the earth, the land.
It affects the land.
The Fisher
land
King gets sick, the land gets sick.
Yeah, and so the king is sick. And so, the land is sick, and something needs to stir the roots, literally, bring life back to the land. And Swan explicitly does that by digging in and planting seeds.
Her blood.
She
almost dies.
Yeah, I mean, the author kind of Robert McCammon kind of telegraphs this early on, and if you were forced to grapple with the wasteland at any point in your education, you see what's coming a mile away, and he just doesn't let go of it.
But the Fisher King's older than the late.
Oh yeah, it's a Grail story. Yeah, yeah. It's Sir
Percival.
Yeah,
or Gal.
Just some of the other things, like the whole the army of excellence. Every time I thought of that, I was like, who's their general, Bill or Ted?
Yeah.
But the descriptions of the army of excellence with all this cobbled together equipment and guns and uniforms and stuff like that, that was taken wholesale from World Warrior.
Oh yeah. And that the colonel becomes like a lizardy, kind of thing.
And that kind of annoyed me. I enjoyed.
And there's that sort of Clockwork Orange thing going on with the people in the Kmart or the Sears.
It was Kmart. Remember Kmart?
Yeah, because it was a blue light special.
Yeah. But there's another story that goes through here, all the way through here, which I didn't write this down. I just remembered this. It's the story of the ugly duckling who becomes a swan.
Mm, yeah.
Because Suwanda, who's called Swan, is
an odd duck.
She's an odd duck, and she's uglified big time when she's a little kid. She is not underground quite when the bombs go off, and she gets horribly burned. All of her hair is gone. All of her skin's like, peels and everything like that, and
crusted.
By the end of the first half of the book, she's starting to get this Job's mask, which is kind of like a cocoon.
Yeah, it's like a casing.
It's like a casing that goes that goes around your face. And it usually leaves your mouth and nose free so you can eat and breathe.
One eye.
And this happens to a lot of the characters. The big thing is that at some point, this is years after that starts growing on them.
Like 7 years.
Yeah, it breaks off. And
it like reconstructs your face.
Yeah, or it makes your face, makes your face look on the outside what your soul is like on the inside. Yeah. So Swan... the ugly duckling, her Job's mask cracks and falls off, and she's beautiful. Girl. She's a swan.
With flaxen hair.
Yes, I believe flaxen was used at some point. And radiant. Oh, lots of radiance. Mm-hmm. The evil characters: Colonel Macklin, Roland Croninger,
To become these deformed.
I know. Well, Colonel Macklin looks like Skeletor, apparently.
A lizardy Skeletor.
Yeah.
And then Ron, the other guy,
Roland Croninger looks like...
He has like his face, the front of his face moves to the side. He's like got a melted face kind of thing.
Yeah, it's just kind of horrible. Icky.
Yeah, it would be.
It's more horrible, actually, that they both kind of like the idea that they look like that after a certain point.
Yeah.
Which is
I have to say, when in the first part of the book, this Roland character goes in, actually it was kind of a fun little scene in a way, because you're like, oh, so the writer's writing, the author's writing the description. The Roland goes into his room in the underground,
underground complex,
bunker or whatever, and he finds a butterfly.
Oh,
and yes. He like.
What are you doing?
And here? He's writing it like, oh, this is a hopeful, this butterfly. And
then so far in the ground.
And then he crushes it.
Yes.
And you go, yeah, that's not going to be good.
No.
This guy's going to turn him, guy's going to turn really bad.
And you know what turns him bad? It's all those computer games he plays, apparently.
Yes, all the computer games.
Yeah. And everything
he
does.
He was spoiled.
Yeah, and he was spoiled. And everything he does that's evil, he does, he understands the way he lives his life as... playing this game.
Kind of a Dungeons and Dragons.
Kind of a Dungeons and Dragons game, like an early one.
Yeah.
I thought that was just stupid.
I really have to quibble with the sort of the head of the clan.
Mm-hmm.
The dirt, what are they called? The dirt people?
Dirt warts.
Yeah, he's on the other side of the dirt warts. He's the one, he's like the nerd who stockpiled everything.
Yeah.
He's become like this vicious clan leader.
Yeah.
Tribal leader.
Uh-huh.
But, of course, he's fat, he's gay, and he's a pedophile.
Yeah, that was...
And you know what? What the fuck?
I know! I knew you were going to be pissed about that. I was a little pissed about myself.
I was pissed about it.
I saw it coming a mile away.
Yeah, I did too.
Yeah. I mean, every one of these freaking characters they're cookie cutters.
Yep.
They're cookie cutter characters. And it's really disappointing. Like,
this character would be played by Bruce Valance.
Ving Rhames would play Josh. Who would play...
So there was then there's the homophobe panic.
Yeah.
That saves the day and he kills the big fat gay pedophile.
Yeah.
Who's been stockpiling booze and potato chips.
Potato chips and Kit Kats.
Yeah.
I know.
It was irritating.
It was irritating. It was dumb. And I saw it coming a mile away.
Yeah. That's pretty much everything, except not the president thing at the end. But mostly everything was like a mile away.
Yeah.
Like, that this Job's mask, that you're eventually going to see the inside.
Yeah,
you
exactly.
You know that she's going to bring the earth back. And you know that.
But then the army's going to find out and they're going to want the food. And so they're going to come and march on it and they're going to destroy it. But wait.
There's going to be one last standoff. And somehow the devil's involved in this or the demon.
Yep. And this character's going to die. And this character's going to die.
So what did you like about this book?
I liked this velocity. I know it took me a long time to read it. But I didn't ever have to force myself to read it. I was always interested in what was going to happen next, and something was always happening. It was a good page turner. It was, and that's good. Now, but this book won the Stoker Award that year.
Yeah, I know.
This is the best horror novel that year, and I got to think there was something better than this.
Somebody got a free blowjob out of that.
somebody got a hummer.
An award-winning Hummer. Yeah, there was definitely something going on. It was definitely,
I mean, some of
the pacing was really, really good.
It was, it just chugged. I mean, 1,000 pages to keep that up.
But there was all the cliche. There was like the going through the Lincoln Tunnel or the Holland Tunnel. Book or movie is through that damn tunnel.
It's over the rickety bridge, through the Lincoln the Holland Tunnel.
Yeah,
you just have to get under the river.
Yeah,
always. Yeah, climbing down the elevator shaft. That's a good one, because all the stairs are blocked.
Right, and there's always that. It's sort of like the Pretty Woman montage of people going through
the stuff in the store now that it's free and people.
Oh yeah,
the canned goods or the clothes or
the teaching moment when somebody offers like $1,000 for a can of peaches.
And right.
Like, hey, that money's no good.
Right.
Oh, that's right. The economy has collapsed. Right. I got it now. Wow.
So was there anything in the book that was sort of gruesome to you or sort of like shocked you or in a horrifying way?
I was delightfully horrified when Colonel Macklin's mask fell off. I thought that was pretty cool because there was real anticipation there. Once you realized when the masks were coming off, that they were revealing sort of the inner self, I'm like, okay, what are we going to see when Colonel Macklin's mask comes off? And same thing with when Roland's comes off. I thought that was kind of cool.
I like the part where they're at the camp, Sister Fun or whatever her name is, Sister Crazy, and they're at the campsite, and then they leave the devil at the campsite, mm-hmm. go off to do something, and they come back, and the people are...
Oh, he's killed them all.
He's killed them all. And
yeah.
That was kind of...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was pretty horrible.
And then, you know, I also... Black Frankenstein has to go through the gauntlet in the Kmart.
Yeah, Lord Alvin's games. Yeah, when we first like hear about Lord
Alvin, it's that weird, crazy.
Yeah, well, he's an escapee of the mental institution down the way, and he's he's Charlie Manson with a chainsaw or whatever. He comes in procession. He's being carried by other crazy people who aren't as clever as he is, and his throne is a toilet.
Right.
That was amusing. Lord Alvin was...
It was cliche.
He was very cliche. Right. But he spiced up his chapters, that was for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was very little in this book that wasn't cliche, that didn't remind me of something else that I had already read that was better. I'm just puzzled why this was nominated the best book of that year.
Yeah, I don't.
There had to have been.
But I don't think it was well written.
But there are people whose opinion I respect, who love Robert McCammon. Not this book, however. They never talk about this book. The book that they talk about is Boy's Life or A Boy's Life.
That's what I was thinking of, Boy's Life.
This in the end turned out to be pretty much of a disappointment.
And they do really struggle, like Stephen King struggled, he struggled, and how all these all people come together, how do you end this in a spectacular way?
Yeah. Yeah. And the
devil comes in, and the bomb is going to go off, and, it's like, well, okay.
Yeah, yeah. Because, and you have to end this in a spectacular way, because it's a very spectacular...
How it ends is like the pushing of a button.
Yeah.
There's not a battle. There's not people stabbing each other. No. It's not...
No.
It doesn't
end
big. It ends small.
It ends small.
It ends, kind of thing.
Yeah, that's kind of... I think that's one of the things that Robert McCammon is doing with the adversary character in here. Instead of making... we'll call him the devil, even though...
Or he's death, or...
Or he's death, or whatever. He's
pestilence,
he's or evil. One of his points is that underneath it all, he's not powerful. He's actually very meek. He's fearful. And if you call his bluff, he'll just go cowering away. And that's essentially what happens. He'll always crop back whenever he sees a weakness. But you can just stand up to him. I mean, Swan's big scene, when he's going to try to kill Swan, she simply looks at him, offers him an apple, which is a very emblematic scene, and says, "I forgive you." And that's all she has to do. And he has no power over her. He can't touch her anymore. He can barely look at her.
And he almost wants to take it.
And he almost took it, yeah. He wants to take it. He almost did. Which would have...
And he taunts her with it later.
Yeah.
"Do you forgive me now?" "Where's your apple now?"
So that's kind of like in forgive me, I'm going to get literary here again. In Paradise Lost, Milton's Paradise Lost, when you first see Satan, he's glorious and powerful and beautiful. And then he has his fall, and he
And every time you see him after, every time you see him after that, he gets smaller and smaller and smaller. But finally, the last time you see him, he's just a snake, and then he can't even talk anymore. He just slithers away into the grass, and that's it. And that's kind of what happens with the adversary in this book.
Yeah,
He's powerful and dangerous, and then he just kind of gets debagged.
And then, you know, and then there's this love story that gets kind of crammed in there towards the end.
Oh, yeah, the young lovers. You know, yeah. They put Swan and Robin together.
And then the sun comes out. Tomorrow.
And it's a peaceable kingdom, except that the adversary is always, you know,
kind of lurking in the wings.
Yeah.
I was deeply annoyed.
Because
when you go through 1,000 pages,
yeah,
you want something in the end.
Yeah. See, I think you and I are kind of going to run into this a lot as we're doing this series of podcasts, is that you and I read these books expecting great things. Mm-hmm. We're always giving them the benefit of the doubt. We're looking for, because we read these books and we think about them, or we try to think about them, you know, deeply. And sometimes, you know, we swim around and we can't find the bottom, and it's great. And sometimes we like bang our heads against the bottom. We're in the kiddie pool.
We're swimming in the toilet. Well, how the hell did that happen?
That's only happened.
Flush! Flush!
It's only happened about half the time. We're about 50-50. Like some books.
So you're saying set the bar lower. Set the bar lower.
No, I don't think
we should. Put the ice in the urinal and
I don't think
drink
we should.
Deeply.
Because some of the books that we've chosen have no big, heavy reputation. This book has a reputation. You know, it's this big, award-winning book. You expect it to have some depth.
You expect something.
Yeah, and it has, you know, it tries. I mean, it's, you know, it's alluding to T.S. Eliot and all this kind of stuff. But in the end, it's just
That's not depth. That's just fancy.
That's just
your fancy church
clothes. That just means that the author's gone to college.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But books like Fritz Leiber's books, I thought had some real interesting depth to them. But there was just genre stuff. They were written, you know, to sell on in dime stores. Books like,
but I'm definitely being able to see the more we read these books and have to talk about them. You know, you don't get much opportunity in life to do that.
Yeah.
So this is a great opportunity that you see there's like these two things, these two ways a book can go in some respects.
Mm-hmm.
One is that the characters evolve and drive the story.
Yes.
And it's organic that way. And the other is that there's a story that the characters sort of march through.
Yeah.
Some books do one, some books do others, some books try to mush it together. This one felt like, let's take these characters, let's broadly define them.
Broadly define them.
So you know they're types.
Yeah.
They're basically types or archetypes. Because, you know, the character Swan, not that interesting.
No.
I mean, she has these powers and you think she'd be more interesting. She really isn't.
She's not.
She's kind of...
I'm trying to think, who's the most interesting character in here for you?
To me,
yeah.
Was Mother, Sister Creep.
Sister Creep was the most interesting, because you can never find out her name. When
she
we first meet her,
street.
Yeah, when she we first meet her, she's a New York City bag lady, yeah.
Yeah.
And she, and you get...
She's a little crazy. She's kind of paranoid, and she's crazy.
Yeah.
And drunk. And
you get glimpses as to how she got there. Apparently, she was... driving drunk, and got in an accident, and her... 2-year-old, 3-year-old daughter went through the windshield and died, and she, you know, the moment when she like lost her identity and became Sister Creep was when the police tried to take her dead body, her daughter's dead body from her and say, "We'll take her now." That was it.
And of course, she has to revisit that again.
Yeah,
she had good scenes.
She had good scenes,
and she has this inner dialogue that you hear. That you don't really get with the other characters. So she's more fleshed out.
Yeah, you get a little bit more with Josh was the second most interesting character.
Yeah. Well, the other that could have been interesting character was the tarot reader.
Yeah, killed her off.
And she
killed
was
off right away.
She had an interesting.
Yeah, she was actually very interesting.
And the other guy, the circus guy.
Yeah. He's pretty thin for me. Colonel Macklin.
Could have been interesting.
Colonel Macklin was kind of interesting in the beginning, and then you just kind of lose interest in him because he doesn't develop at all from
after his first chapter.
No. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, so there was glimmers of these characters that were kind of compelling, but in a way they don't drive the story.
No. They're simply pawns. They're pawns. They're the author's pawns.
And that's, frankly, that's the thing, because with this book, you know at the beginning it's going to have to end up in this place.
Yeah.
So you're just like, well, how are they going to get there?
Yeah.
To the end of the world.
To the end of the world. So speaking of the end of the world as we know it, and the end of all time. You know time it is.
The end of the pop. Oh, is it cut? It's cocktail,
it's cocktail time. So we're going to go right into a cocktail.
We totally forgot about cocktail time.
I didn't. We have our things to do. We have our little points to tick off. What is a cocktail this week, Mike?
I'm not really sure. I like to call it Sister Creep's Crown.
Sister Creep's Crown. All right. Sister Creep's Crown. Sister Creep's Crown is...
basically a giant jello shot.
But it's in the shape of a ring, so you need to get like a ring mold of some sort.
A jello ring mold.
What you basically do is you make the jello that you would normally make.
So you get two cups of boiling water and 16 ounces of jello.
Yes.
And we're thinking the blue jello.
Blue jello. Mike thinks blue jello. I'm thinking like a clear jello.
I'm going for the blue jello.
Okay, blue or clear.
But you want the sugary jello.
Yeah, sugary jello.
And then also 10 ounces of vodka.
Yes.
So I would go online and Google... Google Jello, making a Jello shot.
Yeah, there's apparently a wiki that's been set up for people offering advice on how to make the perfect Jello shot.
And Mike will post, and when I do the webpage, I'll post. I'll put with the actual way to do it.
Yeah, exactly.
And then, but you're not making shots. You're not making individual shots.
You're making a Jello ring.
So then,
what are we putting in there again?
Well, we're gonna put in the 2 cups of boiling water to make the jello, the 16 ounces of the jello.
Yeah.
And then a liquor of some sort. So we could do vodka, but I'm thinking we do Everclear with the blue jello.
Everclear with the blue jello.
Right.
Yeah.
Because it just looks radioactive.
Yeah, enough. It's radioactive and it tastes actually kind of toxic.
And then to mimic sort of the jewels in the crown that Sister Creep looked through.
Yeah.
I would put red maraschino cherries and green maraschino cherries.
Yeah, you can get blue ones too now.
And blue maraschino cherries.
Yellow ones, you can get yellow ones.
And different grapes.
And
blueberries if you can get them.
Mandarin orange slices.
Yes. And so then you do a jello shot that has all this fruit like your grandma's fruit salad.
Exactly. And then take a couple of bites of that and you'll be
You can see visions of the apocalypse.
Visions of the apocalypse. So there's the cocktail.
There it is.
Pretty excellent. So what are we going to read next time?
I don't think we've rightly decided yet, have we?
We haven't. We have a number of options. Should we read I Am Legend?
Well, I was thinking if we could find that...
The Skip and Spence book?
Yeah.
Yeah, let's do that. If we're going to do it, I'll get a copy.
Okay.
So what we're going to read next time is Skip and Spencer's debut novel called Light at the End. It is, along with a couple of other books, the first splatterpunk novel, which was a genre of horror, a subgenre of horror that came up in the 80s, which took gore to a new level.
And not Tipper.
And not Tipper. Tipper would, I think, strenuously disapprove. Skip and Spence's Light at the End.
Any other last little
things? I
apologize for the sound quality of this.
I know, we were just doing some tests.
We're having problems. If anybody has any advice, please email us at
nextdynamopod@gmail.com. Or just email us, because, you know, sometimes we get lonely.
Yeah.
So
let's put a
radioactive steak
in it,
in his mutated heart.
Chop off both of its heads.
Both of its heads.
And stick
some long dead garlic in its mouth, all sprouting and brown in his mouth. All right, that's it.
Take care.
Bye.